And we now have with us Michael Ranney. He's a visiting lecturer, of course, the NEF lecturer with physics at Kansas State University. And I know a very interesting lecture he will be presenting, too. And I know with University of California, Berkeley, and appreciate you being here. We had an opportunity to visit by phone, but here you are actually in our studio now. And it looks like you're running all around campus. They have you doing a lot of things over a couple-day period, Michael, and maybe just some of your reactions to being in Kansas and some of the things that you're seeing around the Kansas State University campus.
Well, I love Kansas. I grew up in Colorado, so this is certainly not my first time here, and it's great to be back. Yesterday, I got the chance to see some of the wonderful prairie over around Alma, and some of the stone, the native Kansas stone and all, mixed in with some flint, beautiful prairie grasses and lovely rolling hills, and it's great to be back, and Kansas State looks like a super place. I haven't been to Manhattan before, so it's a treat for me.
And I know as we chatted by phone, you're basically trying to get the word out about global warming and trying, you know, acceptance. I mean, there's some people that don't really believe in it, and quite honestly, and you're in the middle of I wouldn't call us a too conservative area with the university so close by, but mm-hmm. just some of the things that you're trying to educate the public when it comes to global warming.
Right. So the way I think about it, people who don't yet accept that global warming is occurring or that it's caused by humans, they often their skepticism is based on, say, maybe 8 different possible reasons. And I think it's relatively clear that scientists, including cognitive scientists like myself, have found ways to counter each of those 8 ways. So you might think that the table of disbelief at this point is propped up by 8 different legs. And I think that my job is to indicate how those legs really aren't stable. And in the end, that individuals will come to realize that global warming is occurring, we're causing it, and we should act to change that.
And it's interesting. I did get an opportunity to watch some of your videos. You actually have videos all different lengths. I mean, from the very simple, just like a minute long, to on up to much more in depth. But talk about that. Has that really helped you kind of get your message across?
Yeah, definitely. So we have 5 videos, anywhere from 52 seconds, the heart of which is really only 35 words, up to 5 minutes. So if you have someone who doesn't have much of an attention span, you can shoot them the short video. The 5-minute video would be appropriate for someone who's going to teach earth sciences. And we actually find that one of the problems is that only about 1 in 300 Americans can actually explain the mechanism of global warming, like the physical chemical mechanism. And it's something so short, you can even put it into a haiku, and yet people don't understand it. But if you explain it to people in like as little as 400 words or certainly 5 minutes, that increases their acceptance of global warming. Because why would you come to believe something is occurring if you don't have a sort of nuts and bolts understanding of how it's supposed to be happening?
Well, and it's interesting. You actually have a little card, and I just love this because it asks for estimates. I'm not even going to try because I'd probably embarrass myself. But, you know, just certain things that people, you know, would guess, like the increase in atmospheric levels of methane would be?
We've almost tripled them. Since the dawn of the industrial age, around 1750, we've almost tripled how much methane is in the atmosphere. And that's a really dangerous greenhouse gas. In many respects, it's way more dangerous than carbon dioxide.
And I have to say, as a broadcaster, I really admire you because you've got it down to 35 words. And, you know, we really do conserve words as much as possible in our business. We're always told to make it simple, you know, because right. And right to a lower level of education so people can all grasp what you're saying. But your 35 words, Earth transforms sunlight's visible light energy into infrared light energy, which leaves Earth slowly because it's absorbed by greenhouse gases. When people produce greenhouse gases, energy leaves Earth even more slowly, raising the Earth's temperature. Now, how were you able to condense it down to 35 words? That's really a job in and of itself.
It is. Actually, we pretty much sweat blood to make it like that because you want the science to be really crisp and correct. And you also want to make it approachable for people. So actually, with a fellow named Ron Cohen, who's an he's actually a chemical physicist at Berkeley, we would go back and we'd bring him this treatise, and he'd say, no, that's not quite right, and he'd edit it, and then we'd come back, and we'd say, oh, that's not quite right, and we'd edit it, and he said, yeah, that's pretty much it. Because frankly, climate scientists are often not very good at communicating in just plain folk kind of talk. And so that's what we specialize in. We try to make information agreeable. whether it's the statistics you cite, like if we ask people to just estimate 7 statistics about climate and then we give them the feedback, that also dramatically decreases the denial of global warming. A lot of people just don't realize the effects of global warming, like that we used to have 150 glaciers in Glacier National Park and now we only have 25.
You know, and this is chilling because you have talked to thousands of people and nobody could tell you what it was, couldn't give you any basic description of what global warming is or any of the climate change or anything like that.
Yeah, I'd say about 1 in 300 people even can do a B-plus level. And there are a lot of misconceptions. Some people think it's the ozone layer. Some people think light bounces off the earth and then gets trapped by greenhouse gases. But if that were true, why wouldn't the light get trapped by the greenhouse gases on the way in? So the really critical thing that you read is that light is transformed by Earth from visible light into infrared light, and greenhouse gases don't care much about the visible light coming in, but they absorb a huge amount of the infrared light trying to escape the planet. So the more greenhouse gases we pump in, the less infrared can go away, and that's why we're getting toastier and toastier.
Now, you mentioned the ozone, and I'm glad you did, because that was a huge scare, I forget how many years ago, and you don't hear much about that anymore.
Right. So fortunately, although we still have an ozone hole, it's getting slowly smaller because we did ban those chemicals that were in aerosol sprays and so forth that were going up there and knocking out the ozone. So that's a heroic story about the environment and shows that we can change these scary things out there. And we need to do that with climate change as well, because, you know, when our nation was attacked by the Japanese in World War II, we just didn't roll over and say, they can have, you know, everything up to Hawaii and we'll just stop there. It's too expensive to fight World War II. No, we dug in our heels, and that's what patriotic Americans do. They dig in their heels and they fight. And this is a fight that we need to engage in.
And, you know, it is interesting. It has become a little bit of a political issue. Let's face it, it really has. And quite honestly, I mean, and I'm being a journalist, you could always find two sides to everything. There's always going to be the scientists. I actually did a series on this, not a series, but I did a whole hour program where I talked to a variety of different people, and I did find a scientist that really doesn't believe it's happening. I mean, there are people out there that do believe that, and it's, you know, it's interesting when you do come across, but what do you do when you come across a fellow scientist like that that maybe has that viewpoint?
Well, they're actually extremely rare. Like one of the statistics there is we ask people, for those who are publishing, what percentage of scientists agree that humans are largely causing the current global warming, and it's about 98%. So the people who are really scientists that are related to global warming or climate change, they're pretty much all on board. There are some people that are kind of scientists in the science-like sort of way, like they might be physicians or they have a bachelor's in engineering. And those people are a little bit less likely to understand climate change and therefore a little less likely to accept it. But even for those folks, like I believe that I can tip anyone, you know, that even if I had Senator Inhofe on a desert island for 2 weeks, at the end of those 2 weeks, he'd accept global warming as occurring. Often people sort of sequester themselves from the information. You know, we silo ourselves into certain news sources and such. And so a lot of times people are intentionally or not removing themselves from the information that really would cause them to accept it. And when it comes down to it, every person on this planet would not want global warming to be true, right? Climate scientists, nations, people with fossil fuel interests, no one wants global warming to be true. So the mere fact that there are scientists who are banding together, 98% of them saying, look, this is happening, we need to be concerned, that should give us pause because, even myself, I would love it if global warming were false. I would love to be undiluded by someone.
And, of course, I think some of the fears is the expense of trying to take care of it. I mean, that obviously it's a pricey proposition. I know there's been some countries that have tried to do some things, and it can be expensive to try to change things around a little bit.
Well, only in the short term. It turns out that global warming is really not that expensive, and it's much more expensive to not change things. So right now, according to a World Bank report from last year, we as a species of humans spend about $5.3 trillion per year just subsidizing fossil fuels. And for, you know, maybe a couple decades of that amount of subsidies that we're paying for basically nothing, we can switch to sustainable fuels entirely. So it's really not that expensive. And we would also have better health. We'd have better employment because there are way more jobs currently in like the solar industry than there is in the coal industry. So it would really be a win-win, win-win-win, as far as we're concerned, like five wins on five different dimensions for us ultimately to switch to sustainable fuels.
Anything else you're wanting to add? And I know you've got other commitments and other places you need to be, but, you know, just when you give your lecture, some of the basics of what you're going to be trying to get across to people, who you would encourage to attend?
Right. So I encourage anyone to attend. You know, I'm hoping a riot won't break out, of course, but I love the skeptics to come, and I'd be happy to chat with them later after my talk, because I really do want to be undiluted, if that's the case. But I'd also ask people to go to our website, which is howglobalwarmingworks.org, and look at the kind of materials. And we find, if you look at our statistics, our videos, we have a way that you can compare the temperature over time compared to the stock market over time. We have about six different ways that we've shown experimentally with real randomized experiments that you can increase people's acceptance of global warming just by giving them good, solid scientific information. And we don't proselytize people. We're not telling them what they necessarily have to do. Once you understand that global warming is occurring and that we're causing it, that alone is enough to make you realize the sorts of things that we as a species need to do.
We probably do want to mention, too, the NEF lecture, of course, at Forum Hall, 4:30 on Tuesday, and appreciate you spending some time with us. Again, it's been our pleasure to have Michael Ranney with us today, and, of course, he's with the University of California, Berkeley, and all part of the James R. NEF Lectureship in Physics. And, again, our thanks to him for stopping by our studio today.
It's been a delight. Thanks so much.